Welcome to Coin Talk. We've got our first, not annual, maybe even monthly mailbag show. You listeners sent in some great questions. We answered them here on air, plus a few news items that we thought were interesting. Some audio from a Satoshi's Vision conference. Talked a little bit about some weird, disturbing stuff that's ending up in the notes field of the blockchain and a few other things. Really fun episode. Thanks to my co-host, Jay, for returning to the Crypto Cave after we were both traveling for a reunion episode here and getting deep into the mailbag. Our partner, of course, is Medium. $5 a month or $50 a year to become a Medium member, which means you can do things like read unlimited transcripts of this show. Here's that show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Sunday, March 25th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,628.
Jay, did you attend the Satoshi's Vision conference this week?
Well, I didn't feel like I had to because I live my life so in tune with Satoshi's Vision at all times.
Oh, I see. You wouldn't want to allow like other vibrations to like potentially throw off your vibrations.
I just feel like it's for people who are not actualized in Satoshi's Vision to understand how to get to my point of living within Satoshi's Vision.
Okay, let's hear a little bit.
Yeah, just to cue it up. This is from a conference called Satoshi's Vision, in which a lot of Bitcoin Cash people were essentially arguing that what they were talking about was closer to Satoshi Nakamoto's white paper.
That was the theme of the conference.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I didn't even. That makes it even worse.
Thank you, Counterparty Cash. All right. Who are you? What you're working on?
I'm Jimmy Homma. I have founded United Bitcoin.
Yeah. Hi everyone. My name is Hugo, and I'm working on quite a big project, which is to open the biggest blockchain hub in Singapore.
So I'm looking for advisors, strategic partners, and we're in our token sale stage. Thank you.
A project called Mix Blockchain. This is the logo. Yeah. The website is mix-blockchain.org, and it's a decentralized Reddit. So it's actually a clone of Ethereum.
It decentralizes LinkedIn, and there's a SaaS business model for companies to use it as well to help them manage the future of work. We actually like to meet technologists who are trying to solve hard problems because we're trying to hire people, investors. We're doing a security token offering in the United States. It's got equity and a token, which is, safe to buy for.
Hello, everyone. I'm Juliana from Bitman, one of the sponsors here. And anyone who wants to purchase miners, please contact me.
Yeah.
It's nice.
We're building seasteads, believe it or not. We want to create islands out on the water.
Oh my god!
Private cities on the ocean, run entirely on Bitcoin.
Okay. I think we get the point.
I'm sorry, that was abusive for me to allow that to play for so long. The summary is Satoshi's original vision was a group full of men and one woman from Bitmain selling stuff. More or less.
Let's go back over what is being sold there, because it seems.
Oh, you want to review each of these projects?
No, let's just list them. One was seasteading.
Reverse order. Seasteading, Bitmain mining software, which, to be fair, is the only one of these things that will actually happen. Bitmain will actually sell miners.
It was the only
miners.
Thing where I was like, huh, maybe.
Decentralized Reddit.
Reddit.
You know, a lot of people say various things are Skynet. I feel like decentralized Reddit is actually a dangerous idea.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. You're like, you know, all those things like creep shots and revenge porn that Reddit got rid of. Let's do a decentralized one that has all those things back on it.
Have you ever thought one of the big problems with Reddit was, it's too based on like real identities. We need to remove that element from it.
Yeah, I need more anonymity on Reddit. The weirdest thing about the guy who said that he was going to decentralized Reddit was that his explanation for decentralized Reddit was like, and so it's a clone of Ethereum. And I was like, Ethereum is a clone of Ethereum is decentralized Reddit? Like, how does that work?
I don't know. It's all going into the notes field. Basically, we're going to build an entire world where all the software is just in the notes field of the Ethereum network. in a larger sense, what was happening at this conference kind of reminds me of what's been happening in our email box, since this is the mailbag thing,
well, yes.
Which is there's a lot of people shilling their own thing. A lot of people took this original idea of Bitcoin and went, but what about me? Couldn't I have a business? Couldn't I get rich? I don't even mean the speculators. I mean the new business proprietors of yes. the world. What do you make of that?
Well, look, I think that this has been a debate on some of the more traveled channels of discussion in the crypto space, which is that there seems to be sort of a backlash right now against some of the more scammy elements in crypto. I'm a little bit skeptical of the backlash because I don't feel like we're at some larger volume of scams than we were before. It's just that the market is down. And so people need something to get mad about. You know, when Bitcoin was at 19,000, all these scams still existed and people were still doing all of this stuff.
Right.
You know?
This is kind of the Ponzi schemes work until someone takes their money out philosophy of the world.
Yeah. You're mad at Ponzi schemes when you're like, oh, wait, it's, you know, like this Ponzi scheme is no longer working for me, or my guy just went to jail. You know, you're not mad at the Ponzi scheme when the Ponzi scheme is working for you. So I think we're kind of in the Ponzi scheme is no longer working right now for a lot of people. And so these types of things become much, much more the focus of what people are looking at. And it probably has a kind of downward self-prophesying effect in some sort of way.
You know me to be a fan of altcoins.
Yes.
The weirder, the better, the lower quality, the logo, the better. And that was like one of the things that really fascinated me when I first started getting into coins was the diversity, how many plumes of feather there were in crypto. I think as of late, I've become a bit more of a Bitcoin maximalist in the sense of I'm like, why is everyone trying to like not improve on the original idea? There's nothing in the Satoshi vision that says we should try to decentralize every institution of the world. That is not at all in the white paper. Like, this is a reaction to like money and how money works in the world. I don't think that you logically as a like a creative person say, I loved Satoshi so much that I had to decentralize LinkedIn.
It's almost like they're throwing darts at a board, right?
Yeah.
Like where there is one for every rich guy, there's probably one thing he thinks that should be decentralized.
Yep.
And if you come up with every single thing and you say it, then maybe some rich guy will be like, oh, you know, the problem with LinkedIn to me was always that it was centralized. Here's some money, you know? So I think that there's just a proliferation of this stuff, as there always has been. And that decentralized is just some buzzword that's put in there that you can put in a PR email that, you know, you can send to places like the Coin Talk show where we get like, I would say, what do you think we get? We get like 3 or 4 a day, maybe more.
I mean, there's a sort of a presumption to the tone. They're like, I'm wondering how we could get some airtime for so-and-so. It's like, we're wondering how I could use your time for me to promote myself and make money.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, these people have difficult jobs and we're not saying that it's a bad thing, but you know, it is more intense in the crypto space than any other space that I've ever been. Like, so for example, even when I was a editor of a tech blog at the New Yorker, I would get like 20 emails a day from people pitching and 15 of them would be real and 5 would be nonsense. Crypto is somehow more intense than that, you know? And it's like, it's for our podcast and not the New Yorker. You know?
Yeah, well, there's also like, I feel like it's like less well camouflaged. People will try and get on my other podcast on Long Forum and they'll write like what appears to be like a nice thought out email in the end. It's like, and you know, I have this book coming out, like, you know, don't want to push myself, but like consider it. The emails we get about crypto are like, when can come on to talk about Snake Chain? And you're like, what even is Snake Chain? Like, this email does not even explain the thing that I would be booking onto the podcast. It's just kind of like it assumes that like this is like a sign up thing and that we just find guests by like when they email us.
Let's move on here because something happened this week that I think is somewhat important, which is that the Federal Reserve put out a 5-page explainer of what Bitcoin is.
I didn't see this.
Grapples kind of with the idea, you know, what is money? You know, it starts with this idea of what money is. And almost
hold on, I gotta grab my bong.
Yeah, exactly. It has an inset sort of explanation of what the Dutch tulip bubble was, so you can kind of get
the
where
they brought the tulips ban the tulip talk?
No, we can't, because economic journalists would not know how to describe anything if you took out the tulip example.
Fair enough.
If you took out like the first tech boom and the tulip example, they couldn't explain any market activity. But at the end of it, very, very weirdly, there's a quiz, Aaron. And the quiz is called...
You're going to make me take this on air?
Yes. It's called Bitcoin now, Money.
Do I lose my hosting spot if I get a certain number of these?
Yeah, we've got a guy in AAA ready to take your spot. Bitcoin Money or Financial Investment. Now, there's a total of 8. We won't go through all 8, but I wanted to ask you if you could answer this question.
Yeah,
right?
Two. I'm not Googling. I don't have a computer in front of me.
No.
This is pure live on air.
Because Bitcoin can be used to buy goods and services, it serves as a medium of exchange, b, transfer payment, c, unit of account, or d, store of value.
Damn, I was hoping there was going to be an all of the above there at the end.
Yeah, none of these have all of the above.
Unit of exchange? Was that not even an answer?
Right answer is, but I believe that is the right answer.
Bring the answer to the quiz.
That is the right quiz. All right, another question that they ask here is, why is it hard to spot a financial bubble? A, it is difficult to determine the proper value of an asset. B, it is difficult to buy some assets. C, it is difficult to sell some assets. D, bubbles often deflate quickly.
I feel like D is not even this, doesn't even really answer that thing. Look, whoever wrote this test does not have a future in SAT question preparation, which is a skill of mine. I'm going to say bubbles are hard to spot because the entire world is a bubble. And, you know,
the bong rip is doing you well.
Yeah. Like America is just a 300-year bubble. Like, come on.
You're right.
No, I mean, that is my genuine response to people who think that Bitcoin is a bubble. I agree it's a bubble. Are you talking about a bubble that's going to pop this year or a bubble that's going to pop in 20 years? If it's in 20 years, great.
Yeah, actually, your answer is right. It is D. Bubbles are hard to find.
Bubbles are hard to find?
Yeah.
I don't think that was even an answer.
That wasn't, but that's what they said in the text above. Wow, this quiz is terrible. All right, let's do one more and then we can discuss it. 7. Okay. Given the way people have used Bitcoin to earn a profit, many people, including Janet Yellen, which is Perez for some reason.
Was this quiz written by Tor Trump?
Crooked
Jan Yellen.
Believe Bitcoin is being used primarily as a collectible, like antique coins, B, a financial investment, C, computer code, or D, money.
Wait, it's used primarily as one of those things?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's a loaded question right there. I think that they want me to say it's being used as an investment.
Yes, that's what they're saying.
But it's also being used as money. What's the difference between money and an investment? Is my US dollar bank account an investment or money?
Well, I think it's money given what, you know, interest rates are right now.
Fair enough.
It is interesting, I think, that the Federal Reserve has started putting out educational information about Bitcoin. And as non-committal and as like, we're the U.S. Federal Reserve, we take no position on it. They put an inset in it about the Dutch tulip bubble. And that basically all their questions are just like, this is an undefinable thing. And maybe you shouldn't get tangled up in it.
I have a question that probably neither of us can answer without firing up my laptop. Like, when did normal people in America start buying stocks? When did like consumer stock investing start?
Oh man. I mean, I think a long time ago. I mean, I think
pre 1900.
Like, oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know that there were stock exchanges.
Yeah.
Where I was going with that was, I wonder whether the Federal Reserve or someone at the time when you first could just take your paycheck and go buy stocks, they had to issue instructions for people and say like, hey, this is what a stock is. This is how it works.
I'm sure they
it's
still...
It's not liquid cash.
Don't you think they still have to do that in a
probably,
lot of ways?
But, I mean, it's interesting. In some ways, I think companies like the first investments I ever had were with Fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, Fidelity fills that role. Fidelity is a consumer-facing company that takes over the user experience of stock buying and explains it to you in such a way that you're getting a sort of a financial education along with giving them all your money.
Bitcoin doesn't really have that right now.
No.
Because the fidelity of Bitcoin and also the E-Trade of Bitcoin and the Schwab of Bitcoin in the United States, it's all Coinbase. And there's very little educational material that Coinbase puts out to try and get you on any sort of.
I never really thought about it this way, but if I were to like have to put every company in the crypto space into two pools, I would say there are the alt currencies, the clones, the people who want to make their own. That's the decentralized Reddits, LinkedIns, the Sumo Coins and the Moneros. And then there are
you're still shilling Sumo Coin.
Yes, I am. And then there is the people who want to make the existing cryptocurrencies easier to use.
Yeah.
And that's the Coinbase, the Gemini, Binance,
the
exchanges,
services.
Yeah. And it's a fascinating thing to me, thinking about which one of those is going to win out. When we talk about who's going to be the Google, who's going to be the first company that makes billions of dollars doing this stuff, will it be someone who creates a cryptocurrency, or will it be someone who makes it really easy to use Bitcoin?
I would say the latter
Me too. That's what I'd invest in. And the interesting thing is those people, those exchanges, those people often are issuing tokens. So you can invest in the people who are making Bitcoin easier to use.
Sort of, debatably.
Quasi.
All right. Do you have any news items for us?
Yeah. I was typing out the name of this segment, and I was like, I don't even know if I want to be SEOing the association of this with our show. But basically, people have been finding lots of child porn in the blockchain.
Oh, God. Yeah, I saw this story.
So we've talked about how there's this kind of notes text field in the blockchain that you can kind of put whatever you want to into it. Something like, Civil, our guest Maria Bustillos, wants to put journalism in it. People put goofy notes in it. People put their ode to Pepe in it.
A lot of odes to Pepe in it.
And along the way, like everything else that you can put whatever you want to in the internet into, people have been putting, as far as I understand them, they're links to dark web stuff and to child porn. So on one level, this is like one of these kind of like goofball stories that we talk about on this show. And it's like, oh, look at this. Bitcoin's so stupid. On this other level, a big part of the premise of the blockchain is that anyone can run their own node. Anyone can download the entire blockchain onto their own jump drive or their own computer and look at every single transaction. It's only 145 gigabytes.
Yeah.
If that 145 gigabytes contains child pornography in any form, it could become illegal to possess the blockchain.
Yeah, well, given current laws,
I would say that probably is.
Yeah.
And I actually don't look at this as a novelty story. Like, if there's some weird catch, it's going to be weird like this. Like, I've always thought the fact that you can't wheel back anything, there's going to be some weird snag. And what's weird about this is not just that it's there, which is sort of like a little disturbing, but there's no way when someone uploads something on YouTube and it's terrible, they delete it. We can't delete anything from the blockchain by its very nature. That's the entire purpose of it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that goes back to what Maria Bustillos was talking about with the Civil project, which is that part of the appeal for them is that if you put it on the blockchain in the Ethereum notes section, then it can never be deleted. Right.
Yeah.
And also a link to a child porn site can never be deleted. That child porn site is always going to be, even if the content behind it is taken down, you know, the link is going to be there. And yeah, that you're right. That is disturbing. I really hadn't thought about it that way, but that is interesting.
Like, I was,
you can't delete the parts that are illegal if there are legal parts on it.
Yeah. I was talking to Paul Ford, interviewed Paul Ford at the Society for News Design's conference on Friday. And I was talking about this issue with him. And he was like, yeah, I mean, if you create a space that can never be erased, people are going to use it to put the stuff that they would want to put in a place that can't be erased. Like, this is just one permutation. But like, let's say you want to slander someone or like, you know, create an indelible record of something about them.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
This is a good place to do it. And the fact that people are starting with dark web porn stuff is just internet-y. I wonder what else will eventually fill those fields and how we'll deal with the problems created by creating a graffiti wall that has no paint that can override
it. Yeah, that was the analogy I was going to use. It's like a permanent graffiti.
Yeah.
And if this thing becomes worldwide and, you know, tons of people are running their own nodes, then it really is like a spray painting, you know, like Aaron or Jay was here forever. That's great. You know, like my 2-year trolling project of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and Peter Sagal.
Oh, you're going to take it onto the blockchain?
I might have to take it onto the blockchain so it can never be deleted.
Trolling. Decentralized. Yeah. With the software SASS
Yeah, I would sign
component.
Up for decentralized trolling. That's where I would put my money.
Okay. So I actually do take that as a bearish sign. I think that that's a problem for the blockchain.
Me too. And you know what? The one thing that you said that really stuck out in my head was that it's always for weird stuff like this that things go down. You know,
yep.
like some intractable law that is enforced very strongly. And with child pornography, like it is enforced very strongly for good reason, you know? And if it just can never go down, then, you know, like all these people are going to be downloading child porn onto their computers as they download the node.
Should we do a little mailbag?
Yeah. So, you guys have been sending us a lot of emails, much more than Aaron and I expected, actually. And we have not had the chance to really answer them on air. We are not going to say the name of the people because we haven't cleared it with any of them.
Really? Can't even say their first names?
Okay. This is Caleb.
Hey, right. Caleb.
Caleb asks, isn't the HODL philosophy fundamentally at odds with the suddenly lavish lifestyles of these new Bitcoin millionaires? Like in one story about a bunch of Bitcoin dudes who seem to do nothing but travel from conference to conference, it was mentioned that a guy who was quoted on his way to Japan or something for a 10-week ski trip. Did dude sell off some Bitcoin to finance the trip? Again, anti-HODL. Or do these vacationing HODLers just run up against massive credit card debt on the assumption that they'll be able to pay it off eventually when they're still filthy rich but willing to divest a little to put their grandkids through school? I'll hang up and listen.
I do want to cover crypto billionaires as much as possible on this show. So I agree. It is a little like I also thought it was suspect when those guys remember when Nellie Bowles did a New York Times story about like San Francisco crypto rich dudes. And they're like,
the guy was sweater
like, I'm
story.
Very secretive because I don't want to get kidnapped. I was like, you're in a New York Times story.
Yeah. I'm reminded of the scenes in Goodfellas when after they do the Lufthansa heist and they're in the bar and everybody keeps walking in and they have like fur coats.
Yes.
And and the guy buys the pink Cadillac. And then in the end, of course, Jimmy Conway. Sorry for the Goodfellas spoiler alert, but Jimmy Conway kills all of them in like the thing that they bought. Yeah, I do think that the crypto spending is actually a bit absurd in two ways.
Yeah.
The first is, look, like HODL means many things to different people, and nobody, I don't think that if you sell a little bit of your massive gains that it means you're anti-HODL.
Yeah.
But I do think that cashing out to and then sort of living large in this sort of way, we're not far enough on the curve for that to not seem super tacky and also kind of like a little bit risky, I would say.
I generally assume that the guys that you see out there with the Lambos and the 10-week Japanese ski trips are either the smaller whales or the stupider whales.
Yeah.
And the smarter whales you'll never see about, you'll never know about. They'll be hiding forever. But I will say this, if I were to be getting involved in a new project, I would not want to see the people who were running that project on Instagram at a Japanese ski resort or at a bunch of Bitcoin conferences swagging out. It's kind of the same thing as like the pre-mined versus the like token sale. If anyone's getting rich and partying on the first year or two, probably going to fail.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's the part that kind of makes me, I would not say upset. I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
But I'm always like, we're like, if you think of crypto, and this is the language that's always used, if you think of it as like, as Parabolic Trav would say, a hero's journey.
Is Parabolic Trav still alive?
I don't know. He's been strangely quiet. if you see it as like a hero's journey, then, you know, we're not very far along. And it kind of feels like late market stuff. When people are just cashing out and like, you know, partying in front of the New York Times, I would just say that.
I agree with that. And I've thought about writing this up. Maybe I'll write it in publishing our blog. I'd like to create like a 5-point plan for anyone who wants to get people to invest in their project. And it should have checks and balances in it. Like a vesting schedule where the people who are working on the projects don't even see the coin for a period of years. Like, the people who are out there like wiling out, yeah, some of them are hodlers, but I think more of them are people who made huge gains the day they put something on sale. I think it's a very two different audiences. I have a lot more respect for the people who bought Bitcoin early and like, good for you, go ski in Japan. But if you got your wealth by like making up a decentralized Reddit and then selling a bunch of tokens for it that are like now worth like less than they were when you sold them, I don't know.
That feels very scammy
okay.
to me.
All right. This one's from Hanu. Hello, I just listened to your Coin Talk podcast and decided to send you a message. You were talking about how there's coins and ICOs with the idea of using one coin in one certain environment, like one for gas and dentist, etc. You said that people would have to own these coins in order to use them. That's where I felt disagreement. I don't know if you've heard of cryptos like Request Network, parenthetical, no shilling, which are trying to accomplish to remove this, I have to own a coin to use it problem. For example, if there was a coin for paying for gas, you could pay it with any other coin using Request Network or some other company that you can do this switcheroo. Also, doesn't Atomic Swap kind of do the same thing? Waiting for your new podcast with excitement. Hans. P.S. Sent this to Aaron via Twitter and didn't get any response. Such a letdown. Very rude. Look, people, I'm trying to get off Twitter.
Yeah, Aaron, you actually have gotten further along than most people, I will say.
Do not tempt me to get back on Twitter and argue with you.
All right, well, Hans, look, I have an answer to Hans because the person who said that it was dumb to have all these different coins and it would be annoying was me, I believe.
Yeah.
I still don't want 15 coins that I then have to atomic swap or put through RequestNet, you know?
Yeah.
It's totally fine now. Like, I just had pizza and I'm going to have to fill up my car with gas on the way back to my apartment.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to have to order dinner for my wife once I get home around 8 o'clock or something like that. I don't want like a seamless coin, a pizza coin, and a gas coin that I then have to put through a request net that are all have volatile values. Like, that's fucking crazy, you know? And like, yes, is there a functional way to fix this problem? Yes. Does this problem have to exist in any sort of way? No, you know? So the no is a bigger deal to me than the yes, you know? Like, don't create the problem and then solve it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think atomic swaps are interesting. There's going to be interesting stuff. I do think it's crazy that you have to go through an exchange to do something that's could it operate at the code level. So I expect new stuff coming, but this is how everything is. There's always a gotcha. If we're confused, most people are probably confused. Maybe some of these companies could spend more time explaining why this is a good idea and less time trying to sell me on it being a good idea.
Yeah, or less time like pimping a coin that they can't explain why it exists except saying, oh, it's for use on our network.
Here's a billion-dollar utility token idea. Any utility token that people understand and have a like strong use case for.
Yeah, or a billion-dollar token idea is Bitcoin.
No, that's not a utility token.
Oh, that's true. A billion-dollar cryptocurrency idea is Bitcoin.
Okay, you got another one?
Go ahead, oh, okay. Do another.
Okay, this is a good one. Someone asked me this on Twitter, and I DM'd with her a little bit and thought it would be cool to do it on the air, too. So, pure conversation on Twitter. Can you explain how your dollar value decreases by a greater amount than your Bitcoin value? I'm new to crypto and having a hard time wrapping my head around this. This is a good question. I was confused about this early on. I'll give you a great example from my own life.
You have so many examples recently.
So I buy a Bitcoin for $17,000, one Bitcoin. My Bitcoin value, now one Bitcoin. And my US dollar value of that Bitcoin, $17,000. Bitcoin slides to, I have not looked recently, but it was about $8,500 this morning.
Yeah, you're exactly at half.
So now my Bitcoin value, still one Bitcoin. My US dollar value, $8,500. My emotional state, poor.
Yeah. You know, Aaron, this is something that you and I talked about quite a bit, I think. Yeah. And it is, and because we are connoisseurs of the crypto talk. Yeah. And I will say that the sort of hawks and the, you know, the language cops who would say, you did not put that in Bitcoin value. Stop discussing US dollar value. Now that Bitcoin is not worth so much and alts aren't booming, these guys have been a little bit quiet.
It's been a little quieter.
It's been a little quiet.
I do think it's a good way to trade. I think it's smart. But if Bitcoin goes to under $100, everyone's fucked. The US dollar people and the Bitcoin value people.
All right. I like this question. This is from Hugh in Singapore. All right. Yeah. Hugh says, I'm part of a two-man crypto crew here in Singapore, and we sit over coffee every Saturday and lament our terrible financial decisions. Sounds like our podcast.
Yeah, no. Hey, shouts to all of the two-man crews all over having the conversations that no one else wants to hear.
I know this sounds like a stupid question, but it seems to me people get so hyped up on buying crypto that they don't realize that selling crypto for fiat isn't as straightforward. Here in Singapore, there are tiny limits on our local exchanges, about $2,200 a month. And 1% to 3% cuts or an additional dollar amount taken when you try and cash out. People scream, I'm rich, I'm up 400%, but if you can't actually turn it into fiat, then it doesn't matter how much the value increases. This is, you know, pertaining to, I think 3 months ago, some people might say, you idiot, you know, when the world is Bitcoin, you won't matter. But okay, so Hugh continues, for now, it seems like all exchanges do is take money and let you move it around between cryptos, but when you try to take it out, it's back, it's harder. What was your experience like, quote, cashing out? And is it even possible? Or are there huge pitfalls we need to be aware of when we want to finally turn our crypto into something useful? Thanks, Hugh.
Have you ever cashed out any money back to a bank account?
Yeah.
I usually just go in and out and leave the money in Coinbase US dollars, which is probably a terrible idea.
Yeah, I have moved back. It takes a while, but it's not that difficult. And they don't charge you a fee. The big question, obviously, is that going to screw up your taxes? You know,
well, certainly you would want to minimize the number of inbound transactions into your bank account and their volume in any way you could. But this question was not how can I money launder and evade my taxes. This question was, can you do it in America? Yes, you can do it. It's relatively easy. It's a little bit slow. But I think you bring up a good question, which is, will you always be able to do this? And I don't think it, you always will be able to do it. I think that in the case of a huge bank run, if crypto were to totally crash and lots of people were to be pulling out at the same time, which is definitely a realistic scenario that some sort of a panic sets off, I don't think you can guarantee that, like, whatever price you see at the Bitcoin price index, you can get cold hard US dollars or
definitely not
Singaporean
dollars
back. And I think that's a liability that should be cooked into the price of crypto. If it's not, I think it maybe is. You know, when people talk about Bitcoin going to zero, do I think that Bitcoin will go to zero? I don't think there's any chance of that happening. But do I think that there's a chance that there would be a run on all these crypto exchanges and there would be no liquid cash to exchange your Bitcoin for? Seems realistic.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened.
It may already have happened at some point.
The other thing that Hugh brought up that I think is interesting is that in other countries, Bitcoin's supposed to be a worldwide thing.
Yep.
Even in huge tech, massively economic developed places like Singapore, you know, the infrastructure really isn't there for huge trading. Right. Yep. So he was saying that $2,200 a month is the amount that you can take out. That's a bottleneck. You know, there are really rich people in Singapore that I'm sure are very interested in crypto. And if in, you know, without using OTC methods, if that's the amount that they can take out, that is a bottleneck, you know, and that does make it harder.
I also think it's an advantage. Some of these more abstracted products that are less close to directly owning Bitcoin, these kinds of ETF kind of products have. Is okay, maybe you don't see all of the gains of Bitcoin, but if you need that cash tomorrow, you can flip it right there in the computer and have the money in your Fidelity account or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's good to go. So all of these things aren't things I see as like intrinsic problems. They're just like current problems.
Yeah, and they are problems.
Okay. All right. This one's from Andy. Great show. Could you pump KuCoin shares? Just kidding, but honest question. I used to think it was a good idea to invest in the infrastructure and hold a few exchange coins, but my KCS performance has me doubting the strategy. What's your take? How do you feel about exchange coins?
I don't know what they're used for. I mean, You know, like, why do you need an exchange coin?
Aren't you kind of owning part of the exchange? That's how I always dug it.
I don't think so. I mean, like, maybe for some of them, you know, that's how they would advertise it, but there's no guarantee that that's true. You know, it's like every other utility.
What was the one that me and you were both kind of into early on? OMSGO, OMG coin?
No, but that's like that actually is an infrastructure project.
Oh, that's not an exchange?
Well, I mean, I think they're trying to build as part of their infrastructure project a decentralized exchange, but it's not a token that is supposed to be used on there. So, like, example, like the Binance token is supposed to be used to trade on Binance in lieu of Bitcoin. So what you do is you use your Bitcoin. It's
like Tether.
Yeah, or like it is actually Disney bucks, you know? So yeah, like
Disney bucks.
Except you don't have to do it, but you get a slight discount when you trade with the Binance token.
Okay.
But the Binance token is volatile, and generally if Bitcoin crashes, Binance token I'm sure crashes more. But that's a token that he's talking about. Now, I don't know if Binance token gives you a sort of securities type of stake in Binance. I'm sure as Binance increases, the idea is that more people will buy Binance token and maybe the price will go up if the scarcity remains the same. But I don't know. That just seems like a very difficult game when sort of Bitcoin is hard enough, you know? So I would say, and then for KuCoin, which is like way far afield.
That's a Korean thing, right? KuCoin?
I don't think so. It's the KuCoin, I think, is the exchange where you can buy Dragon on. And I think for a while, is the only place where you could buy Dragon.
You got a little Dragon, right?
Not anymore. I don't have anything anymore.
Get out of here.
Just leave
the crypto.
So I don't know. I think it's a bad idea to buy those.
But I read it as the other kind, which is like an investment in, he's going to invest in the infrastructure and hold the exchange coins. I took it as more of the decentralized exchanges. And the way I assume those work, I don't think it actually does work this way. But in a best case scenario, exchanges get, a small fraction of each transaction. They charge a small fee. So if an exchange got really popular, it would be making a lot of money. All these exchanges are making a lot of money right now.
Yeah.
A decentralized exchange, I think, could perform even more transactions. If you could give me a coin that would give me an investment that represented a tiny share of all those tiny shares of fees, basically the future of those fees, I think that would be solid.
I think that's a good investment. Yeah. I just don't know. I don't know how you guarantee that that's actually what you've bought. And that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, I just like, sometimes I like there just to be a story in my mind that seems right. It doesn't particularly matter to me whether that's actually what's happening.
Yeah. You want to do
one
more?
Okay. Let's do one more. Let's see. This is an email we got that just says China coin overview. And then there's no content inside it.
That probably actually is the overview of China coin.
I have to admit, I'm rubbernecking a bit here when I listen to the show, but I'm still trying to get my head around why you're investing in cryptocurrencies. I'm not sure whether you've spoken about fundamentals at all for any of these. You made a fundamental case for not investing in Ripple, but I think that's it. Do either of you believe there's long-term value in Bitcoin or any of the alts? What is the case for it? Are you guys just trying to make some money off of a bubble and get out before it pops? All right, we're definitely trying to make some money and get out before it pops. Yeah. That goes without saying.
Yeah, that's also true of the stock market.
But is that a one-year bubble or a 20-year bubble?
Yeah.
I think the case for Bitcoin is that it's like a 100-year bubble.
That's a bit bullish for me, but I would say five-year bubble.
I'm down to live in the bubble if it's a five-year bubble.
Yeah. Look, the question of discussing fundamentals is one thing that every single person who is in the finance world brings up, right?
Can I pause and ask? Yeah. I don't even know what that means. What do people mean when they say discuss fundamentals?
Well, they mean so for example, if you want to invest in Delta, the airline.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, well, their fleets are doing this, and this is the value of their planes. And like,
means that. Using your brain.
Yeah, or like actually seeing what the company is.
Right.
So, for example, like in Wall Street, the movie Wall Street, which I watched on the plane recently. Great movie. When Gordon Gekko is like trying to figure out what to do with Blue Star Airlines, which is the one that Charlie Sheen's dad works for, right? Like what he's doing is he's doing like sort of an assessment of fundamentals. He wants to know, and he's making a decision based on fundamentals.
I'd like to know that you've summarized Goodfellas and Wall Street with spoilers on this episode.
Look, if you're into crypto and you haven't seen either of those movies, then you should not be into crypto. he is saying that the fleet is worth this much. Yeah. This is like this is what their flight plans are. This is why their flight schedules are inefficient.
This is
why the union leadership is going to be a pain in the ass, you know?
Right.
Like, so you are basically taking assessment of what do these people actually do?
Yeah.
The person I think is asking, like, what does Bitcoin actually do?
Okay.
Like, what is the fundamental? If you are talking about Sumo Coin, for example, to pump it again, do you still own it?
Yes.
Oh my God. All right. So so I'm going to ask you, Aaron, explain to me the fundamental argument.
I'm going to make a fundamental argument for SumoCoin. Okay. Monero, my opinion, the best privacy coin, the most private coin. If you're trying to do something you don't want anyone to know about, you're going to use Monero. But basically, Sumo does all of those things that Monero does, and it's much cheaper and uses the same code base. So there's some eventuality that I can imagine Monero and Sumo Coin operating like Bitcoin and Litecoin.
What do you mean by cheaper, though? Because it's, you know, everything is divisible. So if you need to send $2,000 in Monero, it's the same as sending $2,000 in Sumo Coin.
Okay, that's a pretty good point.
Yeah. So that, like, we haven't even reached the point of fundamentals. I think the fundamentals would be like, is the code actually the same as Monero?
Jay, I'm one of the most famous Sumo Coin investors in the world. That's part of the fundamental.
I would say that you are the...
Sumo Coin has a lot of podcast coverage. In fact, for microcaps, it's one of the most talked about on Bitcoin podcasts of any of the microcap coins.
I would actually... the fundamental is like four podcasts recorded in the crypto cave. It is the most...
I'll say this.
Discuss cryptocurrency.
People who personally know me ask me about Sumo Coin all the time.
We received to the Coin Talk Twitter account several mentions a month about Sumo Coin.
Our mailbag is just full of Sumo Coin comments.
Yes. So I would say that, like, those are not fundamentals.
Yeah.
But those are a case for, you know, those are the types of things that people point to and someone would be like, that's not a fundamental. Like, that's a bullshit fundamental.
Okay. So I think when we started this show, I believed in Bitcoin. I think when we started, I was sort of blindly into it and you were sort of blindly against it. And since then, I've become more guardedly into it and you've become more guardedly into it.
I've become more into it as an idea.
Yeah.
And I would say, I think the way that I would describe it would be to say that, look, if you're looking for a balanced ledger or like if you want to go look at the actual fucking planes, you know, or you want to see the union contracts, there are no fundamentals for Bitcoin like that.
Bitcoin's not a company.
It's not a company.
Like that is a big difference. That's one of the reasons it's hard to talk about its fundamentals. You can't be like, the CEO is dope.
Yeah.
I say as I look at Jay's Bcash t-shirt with Roger Ver flipping me the bird across the crypto.
Satoshi's vision, baby.
Neither Roger Ver nor anyone else is the CEO of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's something that I didn't totally get as a big deal, and it is a big deal. No one's in charge. So any fundamentals would have to be like in the code or in the news, but they're not going to come from people working at Bitcoin, the company.
Yeah. And look, here's a fundamental. 10 years, like the Bitcoin blockchain has not been corrupted. You know?
Still running
with no centralized leadership.
Anywhere. Survived several forks.
Yes.
Forks did not destroy it.
Here's a fundamental. For many years, people used it to actually send money between countries.
It has persisted.
Yeah. Another fundamental. When smaller countries or smaller economies around the world have collapsed, national economies, Bitcoin prices in those countries have gone up. You know, saw it in Venezuela, Zimbabwe, Greece. The next country that is going to have a economic collapse because John Bolton and Donald Trump are going to bomb the shit out of it will have an increase in the price of Bitcoin in that country. I guarantee, 100% that will happen. That, I think, is as close to a fundamental as you can get with Bitcoin. But I actually think that's a good fundamental.
That's
pretty strong.
People are pouring their life savings into it as their economy collapses. That's a good... I think I could direct an ad.
We wanted our episode to be very pop. We should just do that. We should just say it in very annoying, condescending terms. We should just list, hey, here's another fundamental.
Yeah, the fundamentals of Bitcoin.
Emailer.
So here's my fundamentals. Here's my fundamental case. Stateless, decentralized currency. Most people put their money into the fiat currency of the country they live in. Occasionally, people zig and buy gold. No problem with that. Is gold run by a country? No, there's just a bunch of gold on different markets and it has a value it trades at. Does gold really do anything? No, not really. It's just like
you fell teeth.
Could I make an argument that the fundamentals of Bitcoin are more interesting going forward than the fundamentals of gold? I think I could. I think it does things that gold can't do. It could be used in a world that maybe doesn't have a use for gold. So I think the biggest case for Bitcoin is that everyone in the world will put their life savings into digital currency and will no longer have state-based fiat currency. I don't think that's going to happen, but do I think maybe a few of these countries with really unstable currencies it would happen? Yes. Do I think some portion of America may feel that it's worthwhile? Yes. It doesn't need fundamentally, you know, to have strong fundamentals as Delta, you don't have to be like, in 5 years, there'll be no other airlines. Yeah. You know, you have to just say like, in 5 years, I think our airline could be a little bigger than it is now. I think we're going the right direction. And so my case for the fundamentals of Bitcoin is that it has a use, and that use is going to increase in the future as it gets better. And it will be somewhere in size between the economy of Venezuela and America, maybe, in how much money it sucks up. And if it sucks up a bunch of money and you're one of the people who's early, you'll do well. I don't even really think that makes you like a
war profiteer.
I think that just makes you like, it's just like anything else. You're like calling it in advance. And if you're a gambler, you can get 55% of the calls right. You can do real well.
Well, I think, look, and this is a bit abstract. You know, I was reading The Economist, an article in The Economist. I do not read The Economist.
Wow. I was going to be surprised there.
Yeah, no, I don't read The Economist. I don't read anything that doesn't give bylines as a writer because I'm like, screw that. But I was reading an article about Bitcoin and, you know, it was an RIP Bitcoin.
Oh, wow.
And it was the same thing as the
premature.
It was the same thing as the Federal Reserve's. Actually, the Federal Reserve was even nicer. But, you know, like it was the same arguments. Like, this is a bubble. The bubble is over.
Yeah.
They mentioned the tulip thing. And I do actually think it's kind of, as somebody who is clearly bearish short term, I do think it's good in the long term that the critiques of Bitcoin have not evolved at all in the past year.
Agree.
It's all the same thing. Look, the child porn thing that you said is new, you know?
That's not so much a critique as a new revelation.
Well, I mean, like something that's bad.
Yeah.
You know? But the bad news is basically just pegged to the price, you know? And as we know, the price is just what the price is. Fundamentally, the critiques of the fundamentals are exactly the same. And I think they're kind of easily swatted away, except for, you know, the one thing that you and I discuss a lot on the show, which I actually think you are more bearish than I am, which is like, is Bitcoin dangerous? <You know? laughs> And I would say, yeah, it's pretty dangerous. And you say it could destroy the world.
I do think that. Like, and almost like I kind of feel like you can't believe in the fundamentals of Bitcoin without at least admitting there are some outcomes that could be pretty catastrophic, unless you're like into, like, I think a lot of people who are into Bitcoin also imagine themselves roaming like burning highlands with like a shotgun strapped to their back, defending their family. Yeah. So like, it's only dangerous if you don't like that scenario for your, like, you and your daughter. Like, if you want to go on the road kind of adventure with your family, like, definitely buy Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think that is probably the fantasy of a lot of Bitcoiners, which is that they will have the wealth of about, you know, half of Western Europe.
Yeah.
But they'll still have to like roam around in a van with a shotgun with a trench coat shooting.
Well,
people.
That's what I tell people. I'm like, I think it actually could destroy the world. They're like, well, why are you buying it? I'm like, I don't want to be broke during an apocalypse.
Yeah. I mean, one of the bad outcomes, obviously, I mean, is that like somebody like the Winklevosses, if the current concentrations of Bitcoin are not changing, why would they change, you know, would actually be as rich as half of Europe, you know? So if you want those twins to have as much money as like, you know, like France, Germany, Spain, and England combined, then yeah, like, you know, that might happen, and maybe that's a bad thing.
But coming back to like what you were saying about like the sort of dangerousness, a lot of this stuff is just about calling tops and calling bottoms, basically. Like this RIP Bitcoin Economist article, I read the same article, is basically saying Bitcoin was a bubble and the top of that bubble ate, what was it, $19,000 or whatever, and now you're coming on down. Enjoy it, fellas. And I just think trying to call anything is dangerous. If you tell me Bitcoin's going to zero, I think you're just as crazy as someone who says Bitcoin's going to $1 million, because you're like trying to call a future that I think is very much still in play. I don't think that we really know where we stand in this bubble.
Yeah, and it's, look, it's just lazy thinking, and it's frustrating that I want an apocalyptic, intelligent argument against the fundamentals of Bitcoin, and we just haven't had it in a while. And Preston Byrne, the guy who is sort of the marmot guy on Twitter, he comes close. Like, he has good critiques.
Yeah.
But he still fundamentally, I think, believes in decentralized currency. You know, he just thinks that everyone in the crypto space is stupid.
The best fundamental argument that you've made on this entire show, in my opinion, and that other people have made also, is that Bitcoin is just as useful whether it's worth $1,000 or $5 or $10,000.
Yeah.
It's infinitely subdividable. That none of the promise of Bitcoin really like says very much about what its price is. I think that's a very strong argument fundamentally, that it doesn't have to be worth a lot to be really useful. Basically, to believe that Bitcoin is going to go up a lot in value from here at $8,500, I think you have to make that argument along the lines, not about the value of Bitcoin, but the number of people who are going to want to use it.
Yeah,
and
I agree with that.
That's how most tech companies evaluate themselves now. If you're a new Series B level tech company, you are not evaluating yourself based on your yearly revenue. You're evaluating yourself on the growth.
User
growth. So my argument is that Bitcoin is useful, and because it's useful, it's going to experience user growth, and that will drive up the price.
And it might be a while. Like, yeah. I don't, like, obviously we're not having like the crashes that we had, you know, around like Christmas, where it would dip down to like, it would like crash $6,000 and bounce back up $5,500.
Yeah, you know, it's starting. We're getting a little sideways. I don't know why. Weren't we supposed to get alt season when sideways corn came?
Not now. All right. Are there any more questions?
I think that's a pretty good place to stop. We're going to do more. We'll do it. Look, if you keep coming up with the questions, we'll do a mailbag every month.
Yeah, we enjoy this. So please keep emailing us. And we're sorry if we can't email. I think we do respond to a good portion of them.
Yeah.
But Aaron and I, in our inboxes, do get a little cluttered. So if we don't write back to you, there's a good chance we'll read it on the show.
Yeah. Again, that's hi@cointalk.show if you want to ask us a question, or you could ask us on Twitter or Instagram. Actually, Jay and I are trying to get out of the social media world. So actually, if you want to talk to us at all, hit us on Twitter and Instagram for the show @cointalkshow.
All right. See you
later.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Sunday, March 25th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,628.
And that was Coin Talk, edited by James Nicholson. Thanks to my host, Jay Kang. Thanks to our partner, Medium. You can find transcripts for every episode at medium.com/cointalk. You can send us an email, whether it's a mailbag question or maybe you'd like to sponsor the show. Hi@cointalk.show. See you soon.